canine detection collaborative, a detection dog training trio with Stacey Barnett.
Hi.
Robin Grubel.
Hey there.
And Crystal Wing.
What's up?
With humor and a big dose of theory, our trio talks practical training advice and features interviews with top trainers and scientists.
It's Canine Detection Collaborative!
Welcome back to the Canine Detection Collaborative. I am here today with my friends, the radiantly divine Stacey Barnett.
Hello.
And the dynamic powerhouse, Robin Grubel.
Hi.
I love the faces y'all gave for those.
We never know what you're going to do. We never know what you're going to say. And we're like,
you're describing it. I'm like, well, who's she talking about?
I know. Oh, look, that's Stacey's. That's awesome. And then I'm like, wait a minute.
I am so stoked to see you guys again. We never get to visit anymore. This is like getting really outrageous. I'm just glad we're able to find this time to get together for here, even this at this time.
Well, and it's really funny because people don't, so when I block out time for us to do the podcast, it's literally, you guys get an hour. We've been on the phone for a half an hour already talking about whatever else is going on in our lives and just catching up because everybody's all over the planet.
Well, part of my problem is we used to talk on the phone, but then when I lost my voice, like lost it for such a long time, I'm just out of the habit of talking on the phone. So I just don't talk to anybody anymore. So I just got to form new habits again, I guess.
And it comes down to, when are you driving? I will call you when you're driving.
Yeah. Hey, I'll be driving a lot to seminars and all the things. But speaking of driving, let's talk about some vehicle searches. I tried.
You did.
So today's topic is hide placement. And I think the first time that I heard somebody talk about hide placement, I was thinking hide and seek. So I was super stoked. But that's definitely not what hide placement is. I mean, I guess it could be, but really it's a strategic process. It's carefully considering, you have all these factors, right? Because you're trying to maximize your little biodetector's capabilities. So when I'm thinking about it, I had a lot of fun last summer. We did a hide placement class there at Canine Census in Iowa at Robin's place. And you get to do another one this summer.
Yay! I do. I have one in June.
It's going to be so much fun.
It will be a lot of fun. It was fun
I'm
last
so sad
year.
I'm missing it.
Aww. I know. I'm very bummed. I hope I don't get deployed because then I don't have anybody. Oh, no, that was the systematic search class.
Yeah, I think that was the other one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the things we think about with our hide placement, you know, we think about our environment. We think about our target substance and how it's contained. That's also important. No naked Q-tips.
No,
we also have to think about the abilities of our dog, our understanding of all of those things I just mentioned. And really every aspect of hide placement influences the effectiveness that we're going to get out of our detection work. So I think with this conversation, we're going to be awesome for the seasoned handlers because they can refine some skills. We have our curious listeners. Hopefully you're eager to learn some stuff. And we also wanted to say how much we appreciate all the kind notes and the little messages you've been sending. Whoever gets the emails first or the messages first, we share them with each other. And we had another one today and we were like, oh, you guys.
Yay. And that one was from Australia, which was really super cool.
That was awesome.
You just never know quite who's listening. So we appreciate all the little positive reinforcement for us. Because sometimes it's like, oh, is anybody out there listening?
It means a lot. It really does. So thank you all. And some people keep throwing us some money randomly for donations on the website. And
that
like,
is hugely appreciated.
So appreciated.
Yes.
It's, you know, because the prices went up and I know we're only doing it every other week. But
yeah.
I mean, it's just, it means a lot. But
greatly
back to high placement.
Yeah. Back to that. Anyway.
How much we love you all. But no, it was one of my favorite things that we taught last summer. And I think it's because I love letting odor teach and layering each lesson because I love writing curriculum because I'm a nerd like that. And so it's this just seamless flow that happens when you are setting your hides in a way that lets the odor teach the dog. And I can just stand back and watch it happen. It's just this, it makes me smile. I'm literally standing there just smiling as I can see the dog hit the odor and it's beautiful. And I think that's why I love it so much, because it doesn't feel like work. You know, you just kind of walk away going, you're like, holy shit, my dog just did the thing. And I know what to do and how to teach him. So I don't know. That's probably one of my favorite parts of it.
Well, it was really interesting because you're talking about standing back and letting the dog work. And one of the things that you can't do if you've set multiple hides out and you expect to do them in a series, typically is standing back and letting the dog work. And so for me, that's the value of one and done, is sometimes you can actually just let the dog work. And I, Flash was doing a really nice job the other day. She's doing firearms detection. So I'd set out some actual bullets. You wouldn't think bullets smell that much, but
ooh, they smell a lot.
She says 9 bullets in a little scent tin, not a problem, right?
Yeah.
But it had been sitting in one location for about 3 hours because I was on phone calls and that's how long it had to cook. So she worked it. And then while we were playing fetch, I literally moved it to a different location on the rock pile. Because she's a lab and she has a really good memory, when I sent her, she went back to the original location and was scouring that location due to all of the lingering odor.
Yep.
Right? Not residual, because there was no transfer. It was lingering. And I literally sat, I didn't sit there, I stood there. Total nose time for that whole entire thing was 2 minutes and 30 seconds for her to work that one location, finally dismiss it and expand her search area until she found the new location where I put it, which was downwind. And so it was one of those times where I felt comfortable enough letting her struggle so that she could learn the lesson that I needed her to learn. And then she had to sit on a wobbly rock, which was a whole new thing.
We should also link in the show notes the Psy-K9 image for lingering versus residual, because that is their infographic, I guess it's an infographic, is fantastic for that one. So we'll do that.
Yes.
No, yeah.
They have a nice little graphic about levers you can pull, about your different things to do with odor on, you know, is it threshold? Is it all sorts of things? And so it's interesting when you have your foundations put into place, like Crystal was talking about, you can let odor do a lot of the teaching, because all of us who do detection work, we really, really want to be we do not want to be involved in the search, locate, report chain. We really want the dog to do it independently. And so the more presenting or body pressure or verbal diarrhea, AKA encouragement or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
That we do, the more we're inserting ourselves into the chain, and don't do that.
Yeah. That just, it becomes a cue.
And even in your first story there, I feel like that hits all of the main things that I was kind of trying to figure out what it is with the hide placement we were teaching it. I was, you know, making notes about what are the main things that I look for if I had to put them in categories. And so it's the environmental piece. So it's the weather, the terrain, you know, how you kind of talked about that, the surroundings, but then also it's the target substance, you know, the characteristics of that. So whatever scent profile, the persistence or the longevity of that odor and the containment of that odor. And so when you talked about it, was it a cartridge or was it a spent round?
It was a cartridge. It was about 9 9-millimeter cartridges or bullets in a aluminum scent tin that we've gotten really kind of anal, bless my intern's heart, because she's really good at this. She'll go through and she's got us on about an every 2-week cycle. where we will wash our training aids. Because I use a lot of Noda and I use a lot of odor prints. We'll link those in the show notes. And then for the firearms detection, she has to do spent casings as well as live ammo. And so those, I've got those aluminum scent tins, which I take the 90% rubbing alcohol and wipe down the exterior, because that takes care of all the, whoops, I forgot my gloves, I'm just going to pick it up problems that we have.
Right.
Because no, we have perfect odor hygiene, don't we? Everyone say it along with us. We have perfect odor hygiene. And I know you're lying.
No, but that's the first two, right? So it's the environment, it's the target substance, the characteristics of it. But I think the other two that I heard you talk about was the dog's capability. So that can be breed, it can be the size of the dog. And I know nose work, I love hearing stories about the small dogs versus the tall dogs in the same environments and how different it is. And then I think, you know, that's training background. It all influences their effectiveness. But then the specialization piece too. So that to me goes along with the dog's capabilities, from the dog that's a forensic level clandestine dog to the large odor source dog. And then that last one is the training level of the canine and the handler. I think the first time I learned about Eddie's, I was like, who is Eddie? And why are we talking about his thermals? You know, like, like, what is this? You know? And so we all start there. So I think as we're kind of going through this, it'd be cool that if like listeners want to message us, you know, and if there's things that they want to hear more about that we bring up, because already you've mentioned a lot of things we could have a full episode on. So I just think it's cool that just within one story, we can already kind of go to all four or five of those characteristics that we have to look for hide placement. It's pretty darn complex.
It is.
So if you're just getting into this and you don't know Eddie and his thermals, it's okay. You're going to learn more.
Because he tends to be kind of lofty about the whole thing.
Nice.
When we're thinking about hide placement, right? I always kind of think about it in terms of now I am like one of the biggest proponents of single hide searches. It's like, and using that single hide to really educate the dog. And I think sometimes we forget, because hide placement also encompasses, when we think about how we set our hides, especially with nose work, where, you know, a lot of times we're dealing with multiple hides. It's not just how each hide behaves, it's how they also interact with each other. And I think a lot of times, I know with nose work training, I see this a lot where they kind of take out hides and it's like you start placing hides wherever things just kind of look cool. And you're not realizing that every time you set a hide, it gets exponentially more and more difficult. So just because they start to interact with each other, so which is really the reason why those single hide searches are so, so valuable. And that when you do add those other hides, just keep in mind that it really does add a whole lot of complexity, and you can seriously be lumping your training not only with how the dog actually processes the information, but you also run the risk of reinforcing the wrong things. So you can reinforce a dog. For instance, you have an easy hide and a hard hide out, right? If the dog gets an odor for the hard hide and goes, oh, hey, there's an easy one, you've now reinforced them for leaving the hard one. So you have to really be careful.
I'm with you on the one and done.
Yeah.
With inexperienced dogs and inexperienced trainers and handlers.
Yeah.
Because I've seen and experienced myself, even as an advanced trainer, at least I like to think I'm an advanced trainer, that my criteria shift from the first hide to the third hide. Often I have totally lost sight of the thing that I'm supposed to be working on.
Yeah.
After the second hide,
yeah,
I have scope creep.
Yeah.
And I'm so it goes contrary. And then I end up accidentally reinforcing the thing that I was supposed to train. And Crystal just killed me because she's like, well, you realize that a bullet is technically the projectile inside the carriage.
We have a chat thing, so over here, like, just,
I was just doing that on this side.
here. With...
That's why I wasn't saying it out loud, Robin.
Yeah.
I'm not that big of a tool.
It's a very,
oh my God.
It's a bullet. I don't know. That's what you put inside a gun and it shoots at people, right? Or things.
Oh my God.
You should have seen me at Shields actually trying to buy ammo. I'm like, which is the cheapest box and which ones are the smallest? I can fit inside of a
training
tent.
What kind of gun do you have?
It doesn't matter. I had it
nine
sitting.
Has to be smaller than 22, right?
You think. And I had it sitting on there.
45.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It's like, well, what kind of gun do you have? Well, I don't have one. I just want bullet.
I've got the box sitting on the counter and Joe walks in and
it doesn't matter.
And Joe's like, honey, you realize we don't have a 9mm, right? Honey, Flash doesn't care.
Well, when I come up to visit, we can use my weapon for them. So we can give you
perfect.
Some.
That'd be awesome. Oh, that Yay.
So funny. That is so, 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 so funny.
So anyway, yes, welcome all of the people.
Yeah. You know, we haven't talked in a while. So you guys are kind of getting a lot of like, it's just like,
I was trying to be together. So discreet. I was putting it in the chat. You know, I was just putting it there just so you knew in the future.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
You know, that wasn't going to, yeah, it wasn't
no,
going to work.
Not going to happen.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. No. And well, see, now everybody else knows too. So we're all good. Everybody right. who's listening has learned their new thing. They can like put us on pause and go to bed.
So technically the bullet is part of the cartridge. So the cartridge is the complete unfired round and that's the cartridge case and the bullet is inside of that. And then it's the primer and the powder and that's what makes it.
I'm sorry. A really funny story. Powder's father is primer.
Oh, well, there you go.
Sorry. Okay. I just looked at that.
It all came together. See?
It all came together.
There you go.
Of course, it's short for gunpowder, but
which is really interesting when you start thinking about, okay, now my firearms detection dog has to be able to find all of these different things.
We're a mess today.
We are. Yeah. Welcome.
Oh, we have such God. A big topic and here we are.
I know. And we're just like, we just can't get off these. Other, okay. Yep.
And then, so I've got Flash out doing these exercises because as part of certification and being a good firearms detection dog, for me, that's a cross of somewhere between a cadaver dog that does small source or something gun sized, right? Because they have to do an area search and all the way over to a really, really good narcotics or explosives dog, which has to be able to suck molecules out of the cracks of cars because we will be doing lots of car searches. And they do have us also doing rooms for this particular certification. And then I would like to add the person born on it. So in the long run, we'll be doing backpacks and moving backpacks and all those sorts of things. Yeah. And now we've started putting things on cars. And because our training aids are, you know, the size of a coaster, we've been hiding them a lot in specific locations on the cars, which Flash has done a really, really good, well, actually all of the dogs have been doing a really good job of telling us, hey, you guys have been hiding stuff in wheel wells a lot.
It's easier to do that with human remains too.
It is because it's in a bigger thing. Unlike you guys with your really cool little not naked straws or not naked Q-tips.
But even then, like when we're setting hides, like, especially, we have to be careful. We're very, very careful of damage to the vehicles. So
yes.
If you do like a trial or whatever, the hides, we're not going to put hides in the crack of a car because you can't control what everybody's training criteria has been.
Correct.
And basically, your volunteer's vehicle can get trashed. So our more interesting vehicle hides tend to be if we have the opportunity to use trailers or farm machinery, but our basic straight up cars, you're looking at wheel wells, license plates, hitches, that kind of thing, just because we're worried about damage.
And we were out searching my car today, which has a bajillion bugs on it. And
yeah, I've driven through there.
Right. But also as a private contractor, I don't want my dogs, and even some of the new case law that's coming up for law enforcement, they're talking about the dogs can't break the plane of the window. And so even law enforcement is getting to the point where we really don't want the dogs putting paws on cars. And so then it's like, okay, how do we teach that sniffing with respect to the dog? So we've been, because all of my dogs are started on NOTA, and I can put, so that's novel odor training aid. For those of you who aren't familiar, it's a odor that's not found. Well, we had, that was the explosives episode. So it's a chemical that's not found anywhere in nature. And so I can train all the dogs up on it, and I can have, I don't have to proof off of it. It's very smelly, and I can transfer it onto paper and stick it in the seams of the cars and use that hide placement to teach the dogs to target seams. And that's what we've been spending. We'll spend about a week on that. And all of the dogs will either have all the rust knocked off of them, and hopefully by the time we get done, we won't have to be doing a whole lot of presenting to the dogs unless they've missed a spot.
So I think that the thing to talk about there is, if we think about the power of that from a hide placement perspective, has to do with expectation, right? So, you know, and I use expectation a lot when I'm training dogs, especially people say like, well, you know, I have a fast dog, I can't do a threshold. I'm like, here's a video of Powder. She's a missile. She is one of the fastest dogs I've seen. And I have literally, I've done an off-leash exterior with her. It was one of her last elite trials where she, I released her and she nailed a threshold hide. We had a trial.
I loved that video. We got
that was awesome.
Did you share that on Canine Detection? Did you share that one?
The one where she was off-leash?
Where she just nails that threshold.
There was one more recently I was just about to mention, when her most recent summit. She was on leash because we were in a museum, and I was like, ah, this is going to be terrifying. It was a little scary, but we didn't damage a single thing. So I released her off the start line and she busts out. Well, the hide was like literally on the start line, like literally you go through the door and it's 1 foot to the right. And all of a sudden you see her hit that edge, and I thought she was going to skid out. And she turned around and nailed that threshold. And it's like, when people say, you know, like, oh, I have a fast dog, I can't do thresholds. I'm like, and I see all these people holding their dog back, like they're restricting their dog. I'm like, don't, you teach it through expectation. You don't teach it through management. And when you restrict a dog, you're managing the dog. When you set the hide and you teach it through expectation, the training does the job. And it's the same type of deal. It's like, you know, like what you're talking about is like you're teaching the seams of the vehicle. It's the expectation that teaches it. So you're not, it's not up to you to say, hey, go sniff that seam.
Well, and one of the things that I have found sometimes with management is that you, especially if you're trying to manage with a leash or body blocking or some of those sorts of things, you actually create the opposition reflex in the dog.
Yeah, it makes it worse.
No, I got to go there because you're telling me I can't. It's kind of like a 16-year-old boy.
Yeah, yeah. And the arousal spikes.
Right.
Right, the arousal spikes. And then you get conflict in the handling. And it's just like, you're going to be more likely to miss a hide, honestly, because you've got that arousal spike and the conflict with the dog, rather than just like actually just using hide placement to train the dog.
And that's where I love the idea of expectation or anticipation. A lot of people will say that anticipation is like the death of dog training because, you know, the dog's already anticipating the next thing because we're so stupid. And it's just like, let me do the next thing.
And
let's go.
Yeah.
And that's where variability comes into play.
Yeah. You're dumb. You're slow. Let me do it. I know what you want me to do next. And that's the negative anticipation that we have.
Right.
But what you just talked about is that positive anticipation. And I love that so much because that really is showing that there's that high level of understanding, there's that engagement with the training process, that you can allow the odor to teach it, and that there's the anticipation of the learner, of the little bio machine right there that knows that I can do this fast, but I also can anticipate that I need to check right here and I need to be ready the moment I start. And so I found a lot of the students that we had would just say, okay, for the first 15 feet, I know my dog didn't smell any of that coming in the room. And they would say, okay, I'm just knowing to go back and I'll have to search that again and know that I haven't cleared it. So you can either do it that way or set that positive anticipation that the moment you release, you're at work.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's a sensitization, really, because you're really sensitizing the dog to it.
And, that's sensational.
So I was also kind of thinking about this in terms of if we were to think about these single hide searches in terms of expectation and the odor doing the education. I know if in the way I kind of think about it, and Robin, I'd be interested to hear if you kind of think about it the same way, where when I'm setting expectations, it's all about the simple, simple, simple hide. And when I'm doing more odor, like teaching the dog the scent theory, that's when I bring out the complex hide, where I can set something that's actually really challenging because I only have one thing out there and there's nothing that is layering on that complexity or drawing the dog away, you know, like nothing, like no other easy hide out there that's drawing the dog away from it.
Oh,
is that kind of how you do it? That's how, yeah, I mean, that's how I do it. It's the easy is the expectation and the harder is the scent theory.
Well, it comes down to the fact that, especially with your young dogs, you're always teaching them that when I release you, the expectation is that you will go out and you will work and you will run into odor. Mm-hmm. Or if you sniff harder, you will run into odor.
Yep.
And by that, in a young dog, is difficult to teach and not allow them. And let's keep in mind, my whole idea for a young dog searching at this point is, oh, guess what? I'm going to throw it out in the Quonset. That's my idea of a simple hide. And for those of you who've been to distraction camp.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's Woo. No, here's the hide. You have to run past whatever the cats have been doing out there and the mice that they've killed out there and the 5 bajillion birds that are in there.
And the shape of the place.
And 50 gallons of corn. Yeah, that would be Brava. Brava would be like, corn. Like,
ooh, corn.
I'm
yeah,
a
I'm
cow.
Gonna be a cow.
I like eating grass and corn.
Right.
And the raccoon trap. And then the...
Right. Yeah. I need you to go out and hunt the thing. Yeah. And that's where it becomes really about reinforcement system.
Yep, yep,
and
yep, yep, yep.
That yep. search, locate, report that might uh-huh. take the puppy 10 seconds to solve now results in 2 minutes of play. Mm-hmm. But then the next time that I put that out, it becomes a 30-second search with a minute of play. But they're really nice, straightforward hides. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to make my dog solve this complex odor issue where it sat out for 4 hours and all of these other things. When they are at the point when, okay, now we can have a conversation about we're doing overlapping odors or we're doing mm-hmm. big, huge eddies or in way deep, inaccessible hides.
Yep.
That's way further down the road.
That takes grit and resilience. And right. if you have a young dog, you don't have either of those yet.
No.
You know, I'm reading Crystal's comments. Laughing. That's the whole thing with like when you have that young dog, it's like, don't put out that super hard hide.
Uh-uh.
The dog's going to tap out and go, this is hard.
This is hard. And then you have to do damage control.
Built up. Yeah. You don't have that reinforcement history. You don't have that like.
Well, and I look at it this way. If I have set up a hide to the point where I now have to step in and do damage control, and that damage control looks like me presenting, it is actually better for me to put the dog in the car.
Yes.
And reset the problem.
Yes. Stop the freaking search. Yeah.
Pull the plug. Exactly. It's okay.
Exactly. I'm trying not to use a word because we're counting down on our three for explicit.
Right.
So we have to.
So, oh, shit. What do you mean?
Oh, you did it. That's it. Big old E. The big old E goes on this one. Oh, man.
Well, we don't even know if that counts, does it?
I don't know. Does it?
Well, anyway,
damn it, we'll find out.
Oh. We'll just mark it and we'll make Zach figure it out.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We're spicy tonight, ladies.
I told you I haven't had a lot of sleep.
You haven't had a lot of sleep. You haven't eaten dinner, and it's just we're kind of punchy because we haven't seen each other in a while.
You know, I had dinner. I had jalapenos in my dinner.
People get so involved in the whole, let's push our dogs into this whole thing. And I'll tell you one of the other things that kills me, freaking elevated hides.
That was a long pause. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, no, I'm sitting here. I'm like, and.
That was one of those pregnant pauses.
I have this whole, yes, that was a pregnant pause.
Well, right. Thank and I'm sitting here going, it could go in like four different directions.
I know.
Right. Curious about what else.
Two ADHD people right. are like, yes.
Yeah.
And so hiding stuff in trees, elevated hides are something that people introduce way too soon.
Yep.
And for some reason, a lot of people do them a lot.
Oh, preach. Okay. Not even just that the tree hides, not for nose work, but it's just the inaccessible.
Yes.
Don't. Just.
Don't when. Don't. Just wait.
Wait.
When.
Wait, get really, really solid on your foundations. No, get the dog. Let, have the dog have that expectation that they can get to source. When you have. When you start doing inaccessible hides too soon, the dog doesn't have that expectation. You're so much more likely to get that pink dog where they yes. get to the edge and they're like, okay, I guess this is right.
It's here. Can you come in and help me get closer?
Yeah. You know, because they don't have that reinforcement history of getting to
driving to odor.
That belief and that expectation of getting to source. And now they're kind of like, well, is this the time I get to source or is this the time when I don't get to source? I'm not sure.
Is there a specific ability or skill or number of times or because, you know, like not everybody gets to work with any of us. So what would you advise for someone that just they're just learning this stuff? Like when would they feel confident to start doing elevated? Because elevated are great fun and buried great fun. That's one of those.
So this is me and Stacy looking at each other going,
you know, I'm playing the game, right?
I know. You are playing the game. Absolutely.
But the answer may be different from an HR perspective versus nose work.
Okay. Look at this in front of me. I have an HR and a nose work expert. All right, friends, bring it. Okay, this is Rob, amazing.
I'm going to knife her later.
I know, right?
Oh, okay. That's recorded.
Okay. That could be future evidence.
So. Yeah. Future source.
Future source for me.
If Robin's passing out source, yeah. Make sure I'm alive.
Hey, we're talking about our freezer. Anyway.
Actually, the true answer is it depends on the dog.
Yeah.
Okay, but I want to know, what do you look for in that dog or in that team to be able to say, now I feel like you should start adding elevated into your hide placement?
And it's for me, it's not even so much about elevated, it's about diffuse and inaccessible. Because I want the dog to be able to have the understanding I can work really, really hard. And if I work really, really hard, I can get my nose on odor. But at some point in there, and now I'm going to have to think about it while I'm driving. Because you made me think.
You're welcome.
What is that tipping point for me that I can now go on my odor pendulum? Amazing that I had a little thing that talked about the odor pendulum.
A thing that talked about it.
Like I had a webinar that talked about the odor pendulum. Now that I have taught you to be really, really red and nose on red, now I need to teach you how to make a decision that is as close as I can get, because that's actually what we're asking dogs to do on diffuse hides. This is as close as I can get. So I will make a decision to offer my look back or my sit or my bark in this location. And then it's up to the human half of the relationship to actually figure out the scent theory as to where the odor is actually at. And that is dog dependent. That is skill dependent. That is actually tends to be a very much dependent on how foundations were done, on whether I spend more time nudging the pendulum to the red or nudging the pendulum to the right. Because you guys got to see me last year with Nico. I perp walked him because he'd started being really, really pink and alerting on odor pools. And I was like, okay, we're done. Back in the car you go. And guess what? For him, all that took was once. And he's like, message received.
And that's because you've already taught him this.
Because he was a trained dog.
He's a trained dog. So we talk about the specialization. We talk about the level of training. So if you haven't trained it, you haven't taught it, you can't, well, you can, but you, I'm going to say shouldn't. I'll be that strong about it.
No,
you shouldn't punish the dog if you haven't taught it.
Correct.
So that's why I wanted to point that out, because people may not have known that.
No, that's a really good, really good.
Well, and then think about what we did almost on, I perp walked him back to the car. And then we went to a different location. And basically what I did is marked him for nose as close to odor as he was going to get, which was still considered diffuse, a diffuse hide. And I didn't require the full train final response. It was nose as close to odor as you could. That's the concentration I want you to have, because that's what we're actually trying to mark with diffuse hides, is a concentration level for the dog. It's not necessarily proximity to odor. It's concentration level.
We're off our question a little, but I'm going to add one more comment before I make Stacy talk about it.
I'm trying to like keep my head like on that topic, because you know what happened.
Don't listen to me then. So something that I thought was important there that I just lost. Oh my God.
I did it to you.
You did. Oh, that you didn't send him back to that same problem where he indicated in the odor pool.
Correct.
So if you wouldn't have had another problem set up,
we would have just been done.
No. We'd just been done. But
we're done.
That's why it was such an important lesson for me that I could set up two or three problems with the same goal that I felt like could be achieved with all problems, but also where I started it could also change what I was trying to kind of accomplish there. But I loved that for the fact that if one of them didn't work the way I wanted, it gave me a chance to put my dog away for me to assess the situation, whether is it in my abilities to know how to set up a problem? Is it in my dog's abilities? All the variables we talked about to know if I even wanted to run the other two problems. So that goes back to your one and done, but also sometimes it's better to have a few problems set up, because like the wind changes or the environment changed. And all of a sudden it's like, well, that's not going to work. So I don't have to do that problem. You don't have to do that problem.
Right.
Okay, Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
Original question. Do you need it again?
Okay. Yeah. Oh. Nose work, elevated hides.
When do you know that it's the time to start introducing elevated hides? And I love that you guys, and this is for other people too, don't ask for timelines, because every dog is different. So ask for, when you have instructors, ask them for, what am I looking for in my dog's behavior, in my dog's knowledge?
Yeah. So I just want to kind of also, to kind of lead into the answer to that, is to talk a little bit about how nose work is slightly different in the application, and that the search areas that we're dealing with are much smaller generally than what you're going to be dealing with, like human remains, et cetera, or with a lot of other type of applications. And the reason why that's important is really has to do with how much diffuse odor is out there. So we think about it and we set a hide and we're in a trial and we have boundaries that the dog is working. Those boundaries are not very big. It may feel big. Okay. I'm not saying your search areas are little. I'm not saying that. It's going to feel big to you, but in comparison, they're actually quite small. But where that odor ends up, there's going to be diffuse odor pools that your dog never gets to, because the search area just isn't that big. And so you're just not going to go there. So in some respects, we don't really have to deal with that as much. The other thing that we do have to deal with in nose work is that there's a huge variability in the height of the hides that our dogs will find. So, you know, we're searching mostly urban type, man-made areas, right? We're going to have a lot of variability in terms of hide height. And just in general, the way the certifying officials will set hides. Now we're even seeing hides. We're seeing hides up to 6 feet high in NW3 now, which we didn't see for a long time. So the dogs do have to develop that capability. What I try to do is I do introduce the concept of elevation fairly early. But what I mean by that is that it's still accessible, meaning the dog can still get their nose on source. And that's the key part of it, is I want the, so whether it's accessibility where, you know, the dog, it's kind of at nose level, or it's accessibility if it's at ground level, or if it's accessibility if they reach up, they can still get to source. I really prefer to do very, very few inaccessible hides, even with my summit level dogs. Most of the hides I set for my dogs are still accessible because I want to maintain that expectation. When I started to introduce inaccessible hides, which would include, you know, elevation, I need to know that the dog is really confidently driving to source. That's kind of the key component, is that confidence and that motivation. Do they have that and kind of the motor behind it to get to source? And that just comes with a lot of reinforcement. But if I don't have that commitment from the dog, I'm not going to make it inaccessible. And I think for me, it's kind of that commitment to the hide. That's kind of my linchpin there in terms of, you know, making that decision about whether or not the dog is ready for that. And I generally, even then, for elevation, I rarely set the hide so high that it truly is well out of their reach, because I don't want them to get into the habit of alerting on fringe
being
odor,
pink,
which is really, right, really common.
Yeah. So. And I think with my advanced dogs, I will use elevation to teach particular concepts when it comes down to being able to mimic odor pools.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have found that oftentimes we are either unable or don't have time, because you can't leave stuff sit out for like 5 days.
Unless you have 750 acres, you know, and
we're at 800 now.
800, oh my gosh.
I thought you added to it.
We added to it.
Show off.
Yeah.
We have like a whole town.
I think it's like the Upper East Side or something. Yeah, I don't know. So I can, but we also have coyotes and other critters that will abscond with my odors. But I can use that elevation to help replicate eddies and scent pools and all sorts of things. But if I really think about how often I set up those types of problems, it's not as often as you would think, because it actually turns into really sloppy training.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't allow, and if it's that whole balance, you have to know your trade-offs. And so what am I willing to trade off by teaching my dog to be pink?
Yeah.
Is that I have to also know that I am going to have to do 3 to 5 more of them being really, really red to offset that whole concept of being pink.
Yeah.
And that's really important in your training. And if you do you spend too much time in the wrong place too early in your training, you're going to be fixing it for the rest of that dog's training career.
And this is actually one of the reasons why with inaccessible hides, I don't want the dog to actually make the final decision about the location. That's actually for me.
Yes.
I prefer to read the dog's behavior and me make the decision, because I'm not required to have a trained final response for my inaccessible hides. And I actually don't want one, because I really want to see what does that odor picture look like. And then I make the call on that. And I found that's actually more helpful for me from a competition perspective.
Something I love about that is having Yukon, who doesn't do any of the training anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I use him to show me where the odor is.
Yeah.
Because he's not necessarily going to give me a TFR. I think he doesn't know how to do that anymore, but I can read his body language. I know, to spend that many years and that many reps and he doesn't know it, but whatever. But he definitely...
Oh, there was no
That's
judgment.
That's no judgment.
Yeah. It's just who he is. This
he's
is
lovely.
Why...
Yeah.
But he paints such a beautiful picture. He can tell me exactly where it is, exactly what it's doing. And then I like that I can just call him away when he's in the strongest odor and I know exactly where it is in that moment. And I put him up and I get Radish out. And then I can just mark her when she's in that spot. And I see her change of behavior in that spot before she even does a TFR, because he is my odor detector. Like he's my scent goggles.
The use of a advanced dog.
Advanced.
or an odor detector. I mean, I look at, you know, Yukon.
I love him.
Perfect opportunity for him to be a great instructor.
Yeah, he's so helpful.
For
yeah.
you, that the rest of us and a lot of people who I work with don't have that advantage of having a dog that they can do that with.
Yeah.
But it's something really nice for me because I have this nice little stable right now of dogs at different levels. And
so nice to have.
I can pull out, Flair can say, hey, it's right here. It's right here. She's really, really red. She is one of those dogs that's taught me really, really the importance of understanding when that tipping point is, because when she will work a location for 3 minutes and not leave because she's got to figure out where the molecules are presenting just a little bit more here before she'll do a trained final response. I'm like, girlfriend, you're killing me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just make a decision. It's somewhere on the grill of the car. I get it. But then it also allows me to know when I bring out the next dog and the next dog alerts on the grill of the car really, really fast, but has traditionally been really, really pink, that I can wait a second or two and see if she'll readjust and figure out how to be just a little bit more red. And so that balance always has to come. But I'll tell you, I don't hide stuff all the way deep back in the hood of a car to begin with. It's literally right there that they can almost put their nose on it. They just can't see it.
So do you have a preference when you talk about inaccessible or the odor being, you know, diffuse? Do you have a preference of teaching it as inaccessible at nose height first or inaccessible as it gets elevated?
Nose height.
Nose height.
And it's so funny.
I'm so glad we agreed on that one.
And I had a different experience. So I taught it that it was elevated because I loved the way that I learned from the School of Canine Science because it was right there. They stuck their nose in a cup that's dangling. And I had 4 or 5 cups dangling in the room and you could adjust the height of them. And it was so perfect for me to help him understand because it's still visual because it's in a cup, but he would have to sit directly below the correct cup. And I would just, within 7 minutes, it's what it was between the 8 different sessions. He had such a beautiful understanding of the diffuse odor and knowing, you know, kind of how to work that. It was just such a sliced down, beautiful way of teaching it. But then I felt like when I put it into like cabinets or started to kind of make it, you know, just behind a small barrier, it made more sense to him. So I'm just curious what you think about it.
Every dog's different. I had the
not even dog, because I'm thinking for Radish, I did the same thing, but buried. Yeah. Because if she could see it, she was pink. So I had to teach everything buried. Everything I did with her in the beginning, I had to put it below the surface. It was crazy.
I think that you have 2 things going on there. Okay, maybe 3. You have the individual dog. Mm-hmm. You have the human on how it makes sense to the human to teach it so that they know if they run into a problem, how they can slice it thinner. And then you also have breed preferences.
Mm. Yep.
Which are even different than the dog. And so I really think that that's one of those things where people get really, really stuck on methodologies and they're looking for a recipe.
Yeah.
And I put so many tick marks in this location. So now I move on to the next thing that we forget that sometimes our learner doesn't actually learn that way. And our teacher sometimes can't teach the way that the learner needs to learn.
Or our dogs learn something in a way that becomes, and this is clearly I'm speaking from experience here, concrete that's going to make us want to bang our head against the wall. So for instance, I dislike teaching suspended hides. It's a big thing in nose work where people are like, oh, suspended hides are super sexy. I spent a short amount of time introducing that to Brava where she had a visual. It has bitten me in the rear end more times than I can imagine, where all of a sudden when she gets confused, she eyeballs something that looks like it could be a hide. And she is adamant, that's where it is. And I get a false alert. It's happened so many times.
This is one of the things that I see with dogs in trees, because people will put stuff in trees And so if the dog is like, hey, there's nothing here, it's like all of a sudden some random tree becomes really important.
Yeah, because it's like, I'm so confused. How about this?
Yes.
I think that's where I liked teaching it that way, because it was such a discrimination drill, because each of the cups had something different in it. And so it was visual, yes. But then because of adding the distractors in, they really did have to understand fully that they had to get as close as they could. And, you know, and the odor was just right at nose height. And then it was just slightly above nose height.
Yeah.
But that's what I really liked about it, is they couldn't just guess and throw it in. I mean, they could, but it was not worth it because...
Right.
I mean, clearly it worked for your dog and it's worked for other dogs. You know?
Yeah. And with Radish, right. I had to go the opposite way. So with her, right. I had to teach buried first.
So, and some of that just goes...
But I'm also the least experienced dog-wise too, when it comes to detection stuff. I mean, this is what my third detection dog,
like,
you know.
But bit me in the butt as soon as I did anything visual with Brava, which is kind of like what you're talking about with Radish, right?
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden it becomes like, well, if I'm confused, how about this?
Or if I'm frustrated or if I don't have odor, yeah. I'm just going to choose this random thing.
And that's why I knew with her, I had to put a bunch of discrimination in. Because right. otherwise, that's the only way I could get her to be read, because otherwise she was just throwing it at me. So I was like,
right.
okay.
Right.
So adjusting for her, I knew I had to put a lot of discrimination into it.
And the reason why I like the nose, like the inaccessible at the nose level, and I'm talking about inaccessible, like maybe it's not like in a cabinet or something, but more like they can't reach it, right? Is that they're still going to keep working at it and they're actually going to have, it's usually like they can kind of get at it from different directions and they can kind of work that odor and they can get a little bit more information about it and more confidence and experience with that.
So like an open cabinet with no door. Is that what you
yeah.
mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Kind of. Yeah. So, and then the other thing is that I can also split that out a little bit easier because, so for instance, I like to start with like a deep accessible before I go to anything inaccessible. So it gives that dog that understanding of that driving in and that pushing in, and I can reinforce that. Elevated is just really a deep accessible or deep inaccessible just turned on the other axis.
Yeah.
But the hard part about an elevated height is that the odor goes farther.
Yes.
And it you get more of those diffuse odor pools farther away from source, so that so that the problem solving is harder.
Right.
And sometimes they may have to go out of odor to get back into odor,
right?
To be able to solve the problem. And depending on the dog, that's a big leap.
Yeah. So the odor could have lofted over their head and it's something elsewhere. Yeah.
And that then
a short dog
might require the handler to step in with body pressure to push them into odor, which in ideally, we don't want to be involved.
When we're doing these set theory teaching the dog.
Exactly.
How are we over on time already?
Because this is actually, I mean, you guys, this is a class that I spend 16 hours on.
So we can't cover it and kind of shoot the stuff.
I know you're on one, two.
I know. Probably not.
We barely scratched the surface of height. Get it scratched this. Oh, I don't know. It doesn't make sense. Whatever. Takeaways?
Well, we all have, actually, before we get to the takeaways, we've got a few things that would, if you want to find out more about this stuff, I think we're offering different things.
I have a list because I made a list because I think you guys probably should know that we take this really seriously. So Stacy, you have an airflow class coming up.
I do. It's basically it's airflow for the developing dog. So it's for a newer team where you have different setups that help your dog to understand how and to work through air movement. We use a lot of things like how odor bends around corners. You know, we can do things, different things with fans. We explore things with thermals. All of these things, we use those different setups to give our dog a lot of breadth in terms of high placement. That class opens for registration on May 22nd. If you want gold, you will want to set your alarm. I'm telling you, it's going to sell out very, very fast. My gold classes usually do. So that's going to be, I think it opens noon Pacific on May 22nd. So set your alarms for that one.
All right. We also have distraction camps 1 and 2 coming up in July. We have a few spots left on each. And what we end up doing during distraction camp a lot is using hide placement to help move your dog past distractions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's out on the Canine Detection Collaborative website. You can register for those there. I have here in Iowa, and Distraction Camp is here in Iowa. We also have, I have the Art and Science of Setting Hides, which I think is the second or third weekend in June. It's Friday, Saturday, and half the day on Sunday, where that's what we do is we practice setting hides and then we run dogs on hides. If you can't make it to Iowa, in addition to Stacy's online class, I have my Using Hide Placement to Teach Skills webinar, which is still available out on my website. So you can take part in that as well. So,
I also have a webinar that if you're like just confused about odor in general, it's called Scent Theory Simplified. That's a recorded webinar on movies.sensibilitiesnw.com. That's another source, just trying to understand kind of how airflow moves, how odor works. Really kind of it's general scent theory, but kind of more on the more micro level in terms of like nose work size, search right. areas, how airflow moves generally.
Yeah. And I know I've got some on-demand webinars about search games, locate games or whatever, mm-hmm. but Crystal, you're traveling in June and you're going from Iowa to California?
Yep. I'm going to head out to the ranch, the FDSA ranch. And so along the way, if anybody's out there and wants to train along the way, I'd love to see you. And then I get to go out and work with Joaquim and hopefully paint a mural and do some cool training and then head back to Iowa probably, or might be heading up to Wisconsin, Minnesota. I don't really know yet. I haven't thought that far ahead because I'm just trying to get through my day.
Yeah, you're just trying to get through the end of school.
Yeah. Then I'll be like, yay, freedom. Wait, I'm not doing anything. I didn't plan. I couldn't plan while I was dying.
Well, that's okay. You'll have a little bit of time to plan before you head out. So
yeah. But for sure, that first week of June, I'll be traveling to California that week. So
okay. So right after Memorial Day?
Yep. Right after Sally.
Okay. Right after. Yes. Because we have a cadaver dog seminar over Memorial Day and Crystal's going to pack up and head west. So, you know what? I think I will just go ahead and say that hide placement is a really, really important, often overlooked skill on behalf of the trainer that everybody should spend a significant amount of time thinking about before you actually run your dog.
Love it.
What's yours, Casey? Cheers.
Oh, I thought that was kind of like the whole wrap up.
That was going to be the whole wrap up if we needed it to.
Okay. That's fine. We're over time. That's fine.
Okay. Crystal, what's yours? Aha.
No, it's fine. It's okay. Wrap it up like a little present, put a bow on it. It's cool. Mine are so random. It's all good.
Yeah. Not, I would just say, okay. Currently. Okay.
Yeah. You don't have to. The bow was there.
That is good.
I unraveled the bow. There was no need to do that.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, thanks everybody for listening to our little hysterically ness today, and go train.
Canine Detection Collaborative!
We appreciate the time you spend with us. If you liked this episode, not only should you follow us so you don't miss the next one, but please also rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. For info on collaborating with us, go to caninedetectioncollaborative.com. That's K9detectioncollaborative.com, where you can find our socials and pick up our latest monthly freebie. Join us again to talk training in the next episode.